Most stories do not start with a journalist. They start with people noticing when a river runs dry, asking why a school is changing, discovering something new next door. Curiosity is human. Your right to keep asking questions is at the heart of NPR's mission, and we are not going anywhere.
Welcome in, San Diego. It's Jade Hindman. On today's show, as America's 250th approaches, we're talking about Indigenous history. This is KPBS Midday Edition, connecting our communities through conversation. So this summer, the United States is celebrating America 250. I mean, 2.5 centuries since the signing of the Declaration of Independence. But the story of America's birthday, the story we learn in our history books, excludes a whole lot of people. And that includes indigenous people who inhabited this land long before the U.S. was even a concept. So today we are talking about the real history of America's founding and the importance of telling it. I'm joined now by a great panel of guests, Stanley Rodriguez, who's a member of the Santa Isabel Band of the Ipai Nation. He's chair of Kumeyaay Studies at Cuyamaca College and past president of Kumeyaay Community College. Ethan Benegas is a member of the Barona Band of Mission Indians and professor of American Indian Studies at San Diego State University. And Taria Smith is a member of the Torres Martinez Desert Kawia Tribe in Coachella Valley. She's director of News from Native California Magazine and director of Berkeley Roadhouse, or Roundhouse, rather, which is a program that publishes Native literature. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Hey, so glad to have you all here for this conversation. Yeah. Ethan, I'm going to start with you. When you think about this idea of America 250 and what it signifies, what comes to mind for you?
One of the main things when I'm teaching the American Revolution is that the seeds of the revolution actually started with the Royal Proclamation of 1763. So essentially when the French and Indian War ended, there was a line that limited expansion beyond the Alleghany Mountains. And in fact, George Washington and many folks who desired this Indian land essentially started the revolution at that point. And the Stamp Act and the things that came later also were a part of the American Revolution. But in fact, the Royal Proclamation was in fact the very seed of the revolution because these folks could no longer expand past this line, the Royal Proclamation line.
Interesting. Stan, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, our people here in San Diego, we've really endured four waves of encroachment. The Spanish, the Mexican, Russian encroachment with fur trappers, and then the American invasion. And, you know, it all started with the papal bulls and the doctrine of discovery. And the reason I'm bringing this up, even though it was put out in the late 1490s, that the United States still uses the doctrine of discovery as one of the founding documents for the creation of the United States. And in that, it said, go forth to all nations that are not inhabited by white Christian nations. Those lands can be seized and the people can be enslaved. And they continued doing that. So as they continued with westward expansion, they did not see us natives as human beings, but as something to get rid of. And we'll talk more about those policies of extermination that happened here in California later on.
All right. Taria, what do you think?
Well, something that somebody had reminded me of really recently, I've been doing a couple of these interviews for the 250th anniversary of quote unquote independence of the United States. And somebody, it was another California native who was a reporter who was doing a story with USA Today, had reminded me that in 1776, the region known as California wasn't even a state yet. It was, so we weren't even part. We weren't part of the of the incorporation of independence during that time. We were dealing with a whole other set of problems in 1776, which I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, was in the beginning years of the mission period here in Southern California. And so, yeah, that's what I really give some thought to. It's like, okay, so we weren't part of the United States yet, but we were in one of the waves of encroachment that Dr. Rodriguez talked about just a bit ago.
Ethan, you were shaking your head.
Yeah. So one of the things that we have to recognize, as these revolutionary seeds were being sown in 1763, the Stamp Act in 1765, you know, in 1769, we have the very first colonization efforts of the Spanish with Father Serra and Pedro Fajes established right here. Essentially, this is the origin story of California in San Diego. And so we have a very different but equally interesting story here that very, very few people actually know about and appreciate. And so the East Coast gets all the love, all the attention, and the West Coast gets very little. And I would even say that, you know, I think most people would agree, California Indian history is the least understood history of all American history. And so that's why I was grateful to do this segment today, shed light on that.
Yeah, we're going to dive more into it. But Taria, you grew up on the Torres Martinez Desert Cahuilla Indian Reservation in Thermal, California. What story did you learn about the creation of America growing up?
Luckily for me, my dad was a counterculture historian. So I remember one of the first projects we did when I was a kid. Oh, gosh, I must have been like in the second or third grade. We worked on, it was pretty hardcore. My dad, I mean, we didn't have the vernacular at this time, but basically my dad and I were studying how the smallpox epidemic was biological warfare. And so unlike a lot of people that I ended up going to college with, had a very, very early understanding of the genocide that had happened to Native people across the Western Hemisphere. So, yeah, it wasn't a shock to me as it was to a lot of people. I've always had a lot of understanding and empathy in my heart for the ancestors and everything that they went through. But I do know a lot of people throughout my life who have been just stunned at upon learning what's happened here, especially in California.
You know, Stanley, the Declaration of Independence also promoted racist stereotypes of indigenous people through blatant wording that, of course, I don't need to repeat. And earlier you mentioned the doctrine of discovery, which really gave, religious cover to the violent and the oppressive policies against indigenous people and really around the globe. What were those policies and how was that language used to justify them?
Well, these policies that were created, I mean, it gave a carte blanche for European Christian nations to, you know, to go forth. The first one in the 1450s gave Portugal the license to go into Africa and just basically loot and enslave the people. And the same thing happened in the Americas with the Spanish in the 1490s. With the doctrine of discovery. And you see that happening. You know, they talk about how Christopher Columbus was this great man. I mean, he was coming to, you know, exploit resources and take away, you know, from people. And, you know, I used to hear it growing up that this is the new world and this was discovered. And, you know, the thing is this, we've been here since time immemorial. How can you discover a place that people are already living at? You know, I mean, there's contradictions to that, but, you know, the narrative that has been created, it glorifies, this European, force venturing out into this, untamed world and you know, bringing civilization, and completely discounts what was here and the impact that took place with the native people of these lands.
And Ethan, I want to go back to something you said a little bit earlier, which is that, you know, California is where this all began, and that challenges the idea of, you know, Western expansion even, and, you know, gateway to the West, all of that. Talk a bit about that, though.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things Stan taught me is that when California became a state, 80% of the population were indigenous, California Indians. And you hardly ever hear that narrative when California became a state. You know, just the American experience came here after the Mexican War ended. In 1848, you have the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, and then California would become a state 2 years later. And so California became a state, the fastest ever to become a state from a territory. And to do that, it had to do something with the Native Americans. And when you hear about territories becoming states, one of the criteria is, what do we do with the Native Americans? And the answer was removal and reservations. And you know, our guests hinted to the California genocide. That was also an option. And so really the American experience when it came here, really, you know, it was actually the only official state-sponsored genocide in the Union that was from 1846 to 1872, when approximately 50 to 100,000 Native Americans were killed and paid for in bounties.
Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure that's clear. White settlers ventured out west in the 1840s in search of gold, and in the years that followed, killed around 80% of California's indigenous population in a state-sanctioned genocide. That legacy obviously stills on. And it wasn't until 2019 that California officially apologized for that genocide. So, Stanley, what is the legacy of that today, you think?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad Mr. Benegas brought that up, because, I mean, it was institutionalized policy. I mean, from the first governor, Governor Peter Burnett, who stated in his inauguration that the war of extermination between the Indian and the white man will continue until all Indians are exterminated. This was his words. And those policies continued and continued. And, you know, it was illegal for natives to testify against white people. White people could not be prosecuted for killing an Indian. As a matter of fact, they even got paid a bounty for it. And I mean, whole nations were eradicated. I mean, their language, their culture, their name, they've just been wiped off the face of the earth. That the whole native epistemology or organic science that they've had for thousands upon thousands of years has been erased. And these are some of the things that have happened. California, a lot of people don't realize, has more language and cultural diversity than any other place in the world aside from Papua New Guinea. Hundreds and hundreds of different nations resided here. Well, you know, with the genocide that took place, a lot of those nations were wiped out. And the ones who are left, you know, a lot of people never even knew that there were Native people here. A lot of people don't realize that San Diego has more reservations than any other county in the country. We have 18 reservations here, you know, but because our numbers have been depleted due to diseases, wars, things like that, they hardly hear from us. And one last thing I just wanted to say, you know, We're talking about the war of extermination, but we also had our resistance. Mm-hmm. We had our pushback, mm-hmm. such as the Guerra Uprising, the Antonio Guerra Uprising, yeah. that took place in 1851.
And as soon as we come back from our break, that is where I want to pick our conversation up. Stick with us. KPBS Midday Edition is back right after the break. Jade Hindman here. If you are a fan of Midday Edition, I'm inviting you to a live taping of the program on Sunday, July 12th at KPBS. Join me and my podcast friends at Port of Entry and The Finest as we explore the art of protest in our democracy. It's all part of the America 250 commemoration, examining how people use advocacy, comedy, art, and storytelling to spark conversation and create change here in San Diego. Tickets are on sale now for just $20, and the first 50 to register get their pick of t-shirt when they arrive. Details at kpbs.org/livepod. Welcome back to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. The United States is preparing to celebrate 250 years since the signing of the Declaration of Independence. But although indigenous people are a central part of America's origin story, they are often left out of the narrative. I'm here with three guests to talk about that history and the importance of centering indigenous perspectives as we talk about America 250. I'm here with Stanley Rodriguez, member of Santa Isabel Band of the Ipai Nation. Ethan Benegas is a member of the Barona Band of Mission Indians. And Tarya Smith is a member of the Torres Martinez Desert Kuwia tribe in Coachella Valley. First, I want to pick up where we left off, Ethan, which is a thread on resistance and resilience. Pick us back up there.
Yeah, I think if you look at the context of what happened here in California, it was essentially an apocalypse, you know, and one of the things that the main reason why we are still here is because of our resistance and our resilience. And for example, my tribe started with just 38 people. There's 38 founding members of Barona. Many tribes started with very few people, and it's really a miracle we are still even here. And resistance started, in fact, the very first year Father Serra became landed here in 1769. His caravan was shot. Literally, Father Serra's servant boy died in his arms, an arrow shot through his neck. We also have the resistance, the Great Resistance Movement in 1775, a year before the Independence Day, where the mission was burned down. And about 12 Tipai villages organized and burned down the mission. This is one of the most successful mission revolts in mission history, as well as there was one in Yuma or Quitsan. And so we have this long history of resistance all throughout the mission period, as well as in the American period. One of the great resistance movements my father was a part of was the occupation of Alcatraz for 18 months, where they demonstrated to the government that they must honor their treaties. And this was the Treaty of Fort Laramie, but there were 400-plus treaties that were broken. And so it is up to us, Native Americans, to remind the government to oblige by their treaties and their promises. And resistance takes many forms. You know, we're educators. All of us are educators. That's a form of resistance. You know, in our comic book, we have a whole page on resistance, highlighting the different moments and movements when Kumeyaay people were there resisting the government. And this indeed, in fact, one of the greatest things we can do is build resilience because, you know, life is hard and it will always be this way. So we must resist and be resilient if we are to survive.
Yeah, and you just slid that in there that you have a comic book. We're gonna mention that. We'll have details to that on our website, kpbs.org, because it tells a real story of California history there. Tarya, what does the survival of indigenous communities in the face of systemic erasure teach us about resilience?
Gosh, that's a complicated question. But I look to those of us, you know, here in Southern California who are part of the birdsong world, the birdsong and dance world, mm-hmm. and to see these songs that have been with us since our creation, and how, I mean, there are thousands of singers and dancers from all over the region, and the persistence, and it's an illustration to me of the persistence and the strength that we have as Native people, Indigenous people, first people of Californians, original Californians. I think that there's a lot to be taught about that, that you don't give up, that we come from the strongest stock that there is, you know? I mean, lots of people have perished and we're still here. And that's something definitely to be looked at for sure.
Yeah. Hey, Stanley, you know, this week on the show, we've been talking about recent immigration-related rulings by the Supreme Court and what they say about who gets to be American. I mean, it makes you think about America's history of forced displacement from the genocide of indigenous people in California to the transatlantic slave trade. And it's a reminder that while some have been forced to cross borders, others have had borders cross them. When you think about the state of immigration today and how it fits into American history, what comes up for you?
I have strong feelings about that. When the international border was created, it cut right through Kumeyaay territory. Half of our nation is on this side of the border. The other half is in Baja. And there's 4 to 6 Kumeyaay communities still in Baja. So passing and repassing has been an issue for us. And when I go to Tijuana or Ensenada, I'm in Kumeyaay territory. I'm in the territory of my people. On the flip side, when Kumeyaay from Baja come onto this side, they're still in the same territory. But because of the two governments, they've had trouble crossing and recrossing. And the way the administration has run, it's becoming even more difficult to do that. And, you know, we travel across to support each other for ceremonies such as wakes, other things that are going on, celebrations, other different things. And it is an important part of keeping the cohesion with our people. So when the border wall was put up, you were talking earlier about resistance, there was calls to action, and Kumeyaay from both sides of the border went to the border wall and protested what was going on. And, you know, it was a show that, you know, although our people have lost many, you know, due to the things that have happened in the past, we are still here and we are still a voice and we're still a people to be dealt with. So that's one of the things that, you know, I just want to say about that.
And Tyria, do you have anything you'd like to add quickly?
You know, I did really quickly about the, it was mentioned earlier about, what's happened here in California as being a genocide. And I know that there was an apology some time back. I'm hoping that there's some teeth behind that apology because to support everything that we lost that we're trying to regain. Our language programs need support. The environmental impacts that have been, you know, that have ravaged our communities, we need support for restoration. And I hope that people coming to terms in reconciliation will put some teeth behind their apologies and make sure that those things are met for us.
Indeed. Ethan?
Yeah, I just want to dovetail off that. When I do, I do often speak to many different groups all around the county, you know, young, old, different demographics. One of the main questions, the very first question I ask is how many people have heard of the California genocide? And because I want to take stock on who actually knows about this. And almost always it's less than 5% of the room, sometimes zero. And so the problem is there wasn't any coverage on this, and including the apology. And so, you know, and that's one of the things is how do we get this into the mainstream? That's always been my biggest question, is people need more awareness of this story and this history so it doesn't repeat itself.
And that gets to the crux of why this is so important, why you all as educators are so important, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, for those who do want to learn more, all three of you have plenty of great work highlighting indigenous history and perspectives, and we're going to link that to our website, kpbs.org. I've been speaking with Stanley Rodriguez, member of Santa Isabel Band of the Ipai Nation. He's chair of Kumeyaay Studies at Cuyamaca College and past president of Kumeyaay Community College. Also, Ethan Benegas, member of the Barona Band of Mission Indians and professor of American Indian Studies 1920s at San Diego State University. And also Taria Smith, a member of the Torres Martinez Desert Kuwia tribe in Coachella Valley. She's editor of news from Native California Magazine and director of Berkeley Road Roundhouse, a program that publishes Native literature. Thank you all so much for this conversation and for joining us.
Thank you very
much.
Thank
you.
Thank you
all. That's our show for today. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. Thanks for tuning in to Midday Edition. Be sure to have a great day on purpose, everyone.
KPBS has partnered with StoryCorps for the One Small Step program. We invite you to sign up to have a conversation with a person that may have different views so you may talk, not about politics, but to understand each other better. Sign up at kpbs.org/onesmallstep.